Good morning, you're listening to The Weekend Edition. Barry White sitting in for Greg Hughes today. Coming up on a packed show, almost 300 repossession orders were before Letterkenny Court this week. But what do you do if you find yourself in this position? Who do you talk to? We'll be speaking to Michael Cullity from the Money Advice and Budgeting Service. Also, can we do almost anything if we put our minds to it? We'll be speaking to motivational speaker Jim Lawless, who says we can. We'll be talking to Inishowen photographer Ronan McLaughlin, whose pictures of the Northern Lights taken from Malin Head have went viral this week. We'll also have the Scottish Premier League Goal of the Month winner on the show. 11-year-old Jay Beattie and his dad will be talking to us just after 11. Musicians Mark Black, Rory Freeland, Kid O'Callaghan will also be talking on the show about their new project. And Irish dancing enthusiast John Callan will be telling us how he overcame bullying. And no Donegal beaches in TripAdvisor's top 10 beaches in the country. Many people here are not happy. That's all coming up on today's programme. A very good morning. If you want to text in any comments to the show, you can text in on 086 770 555. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Highland Radio, and you can also follow myself on Twitter, Barry White 85, if you want to make any comments. Catherine Gaffney's also with me to have a quick look through the papers. The Irish Daily Mirror: Dwyer pretended to stab me as we had sex. Ex-love of Elaine killing accused tells court about a sick fantasy. Graham Dwyer brought a knife into the bedroom and pretended to stab his ex during sex, a court heard yesterday. And this story takes up most of the front pages this morning. They go into detail in the Daily Mirror, into details of the trial. Eimear McShea told the PAC Central Criminal Court yesterday how the accused pretended to stab her while having sex during their relationship in the early 1990s in college. Miss McShea, who is the mother of Graham's 22-year-old Shannon, was given evidence yesterday on day 22 of the trial. Also in page 5 of today's Irish Mirror, Paul McGrath can't be sure if he won't turn to drink again. Paul McGrath said yesterday he cannot be certain he will never drink again. The football legend, 55 years of age, opened up about his ongoing problems with alcohol, early childhood experiences of racism and memories of Italian 90. Catherine, you've got the Sun newspaper.
I'm just looking at a few of the red tops here. As you say, the Elaine O'Hara Dwyer case dominates all of those front pages. I have the Indo in front of me here. New Greek coalition capitulates on bailout. Greece has struck a deal to extend the country's bailout by 4 months, a move certain to anger many who voted for the new government in Athens. The agreement removes the immediate risk of Greece running out of money next month and possibly being forced out of the single currency. Now, there's actually another story in here I noticed in the Indo. It's down a few pages. Let's see. It's on antibiotics. It was like a health study done, and which county is the best in Ireland for taking antibiotics, whether it's a good or a bad thing. But anyway, the highest rates of use are found in Mayo, Longford and Westmeath. Now Donegal is featured kind of second ranking after that. In the Indo, it has like a map of the different counties shaded as good and as bad as they are of taking antibiotics. Now, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. Do Donegal need antibiotics more than others or that kind of thing?
You're asking me, I don't know. Well, I read a thing during the week that they're saying people who take more antibiotics are more at risk of certain diseases.
Yeah,
then as
that's
well,
it so. Too. I mean, if you take more antibiotics, you kind of lower your immune system a little bit if you're kind of relying on them.
But yeah, and your antibodies become too used to it.
That's found that kind of interesting.
Also in the Irish Daily Mirror, Lord Henry Mountbatten on page 6, the view from Slane Castle. He's kind of having a go about Enda Kenny's interview on RT Primetime on Thursday night. Suppose he's kind of saying that Miriam O'Callaghan wasn't hard enough in the Taoiseach. I suppose that kind of links in with the Late Late Show. You didn't watch it last night?
No, Barry, I went to bed early last night, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Paul Murphy was on, a lot of people commenting about his interview on Twitter. Mm-hmm. People saying that Ryan Tuberty gave him too hard of a time. He did interrogate him, he did give him quite a grilling, but he's a politician, why not? Mm-hmm. But I suppose if you compare the Primetime interview of Enda Kenny with the interview with Paul Murphy or last night, then two completely different interviews. Also here in the Irish Daily Mirror, Enda ploughs $1.4 billion into farming. A $1.4 billion scheme for farmers was announced at the Fine Gael Party conference yesterday. Delegates at the event in Castlebar heard reviving rural Ireland was a top priority. Enda Kenny said he wants to get some of those worst affected by the recession back on their feet with a series of big money initiatives. Also, fears were mounting last night for Aslan star Chrissy Dignam after he was rushed to hospital. The 54-year-old singer, whose blood cancer is in remission, was undergoing tests at Dublin's Beaumont. Christy was diagnosed with two types of cancer, melanoma and another type of cancer, in March 2013. He has been undergoing grueling treatment for the last number of years. Pages 8 and 9, I'm the Killer, Brill, talking about EastEnders. I can't even talk about it. I've never watched EastEnders.
I've never watched it either, but I have to admit, when I was sitting having a bite to eat last night, it was on in the background. The whole country, or even Britain as well, have been glued to it all week. It's been live all week, and I've never seen such reaction on Twitter over different storylines. Now, I haven't, as I said, I never watch it, but it's just been a serious phenomenon all week, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, millions of people watch it. And I was saying about Enda Kenny's interview with Primetime, it was actually put back half an hour. So people, for the EastEnders episode, I suppose it shows you where people's laurels lie. They would rather watch a soap than listen to our Taoiseach give a rare interview. Also in the papers, burglars linked to water protests. Burglars are taking advantage of the water protests to raid cars in homes. The Irish Mirror can reveal the heavy guard of presence at some demonstrations has left some parts of Dublin lacking in cover and susceptible to break-ins. The Dublin West area has seen a huge spike in burglaries and the level of thefts, and the Irish Mirror is linking the protests and the burglaries.
There's quite an interesting article in the Indo here as well on page 18. As a young Garda, I was sent home for refusing to make sandwiches. Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan has opened up about her experience of sexism in her early years of her career and believes the Garda weren't really sure what they were going to do with women at the time. It actually looks to be a very interesting article and definitely worth a read.
Yeah, I was reading that earlier. It's quite an omission for the Garda Commissioner to come out with.
And certainly.
It shows you maybe how much things have changed. Years ago, she was sent home for not making sandwiches.
It's not that terribly long ago either.
And now she's the Garda Commissioner. Also in the paper, I suppose, Oscar fever. The Oscars are coming up tomorrow night. Surely you'll be paying attention to that.
I will, but you know yourself, whenever it's on tomorrow night, but normally over here you kind of catch up with it on the Monday. It's going to be a tough one enough to call. I'd say Eddie Redmayne will probably take home Best Actor for his theory of, or in the theory of everything. I think, is it Julianne Moore that's kind of tipped to get Best Actress?
Patricia Arquette's been tipped for Best Actress, I think.
As well. I think they're kind of in close cahoots sort of thing, but it will be hard to predict. I wouldn't rule out, and maybe this is me, just my opinion, but I wouldn't rule out Bradley Cooper maybe as a contender for American Sniper. I thought he was excellent in that film.
It's no chance of winning Best Actor. It'll be him. It'll be okay. Eddie Redmayne or Michael Keaton, I would guess. Best film will probably go to Boyhood. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but
I think it's the fact that it was shot over 14 years and it's so different.
Yeah.
Best film for me would probably be Birdman. I really enjoyed that film.
I haven't seen that yet myself.
Just looking at the Irish Daily Mail, Greece and Europe agree bailout deal. Greece and its European creditors have reached a deal to extend the country's bailout for 4 months. It was looking like a deal wasn't going to be reached there yesterday, but they've reached the deal. The deal was reached at a meeting of finance ministers in Brussels yesterday. An official said as part of the agreement, Greece could present a first list of reform measures by Monday for the country's debt inspectors to assess. If the officials from the European Central Bank, International Monetary Fund and European Commission say the list is acceptable, then another Eurozone finance meeting could take place via conference call on Tuesday. So it still seems that Syriza are still going to have to impose austerity measures. They have got a 4 month delay or extension even, but they're still going to have to maybe go with the austerity measures, and you'll be looking with that with interest. You've got Podemos is the next party, the left wing party in Spain, and I suppose you've Sinn Féin here in Ireland, so people are looking at Syriza to see if they can get rid of the austerity measures, but it's looking unlikely at the minute, but we'll see. There's a long way to go in that story. Anything else?
Tobacco packaging legislation to go ahead. The government ignores legal threat from tobacco firm over new public health bill. The government is to press ahead with plans to introduce plain packaging for tobacco products. The government yesterday ignored a threat from one of the world's largest tobacco firms that it should halt legalisation going through the Dáil immediately or face a high court claim for damages, and warned it would defend any legal challenge and pursue the company concerned for costs.
Another story here in the Irish Daily Mail. Rugby, it's brought us so much joy, but has rugby become just too dangerous? It's a story by a journalist, Brian Carroll. He said, as we look ahead to the English game, which could be the decider for the Grand Slam, rugby fever is back at full pitch. But even while we cheer on our heroes in green, growing numbers of parents are voicing fears that this sport is too dangerous with its high impact collisions. And suppose they've got the picture of Johnny Sexton, who busted his eye last week, was left with a couple of stitches in his eyebrow, a huge black eye, but he played on and a man of the match winning performance. Do you watch rugby?
What do you think? No. No, I don't.
You don't? But, well, there's a lot of people who don't or are not interested in rugby. Like, I'm not an avid rugby fan, but I watch the Six Nations.
Yeah, I dip in and out from time to time. I wouldn't have a major interest or following in it. I'd be more of a Gaelic football fan myself.
But at first look, would you say rugby is dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, when I do watch it, which is very seldom, I just think it's very, very brutal at times, you know. I don't even understand it, but whenever I do see it on, it seems very dangerous sport.
So the whole controversy surrounding concussion in rugby, but at least the doctors come onto the pitch in rugby and they check the players out, where it's in other sports that really doesn't happen. So there are doctors at the side of the pitch, so that argument can be made.
Indeed. Let's see now. Kenny says China to lift ban on Irish beef. Now, I was chatting about this at 10. A formal agreement has been reached with China on lifting its ban on Irish beef, Taoiseach Enda Kenny has announced. He also said small schools and rural communities would not close unless a patron community decides so. The beef decision follows last week's reopening of the US market to Irish beef after a 17-year EU-wide ban. Ireland is to date the only EU member state permitted to export to the US following the BSE or mad cow controversy of the 1990s.
Just looking at some of the back pages, Jose Mourinho is filling all the back pages of sports. Jose Mourinho and Roman Abramovich vent their fury at racist Chelsea fans in Paris. Jose Mourinho and Roman Abramovich say they're ashamed. They've admitted he is deeply ashamed of the racist incident involving a group of Chelsea supporters on the Paris Metro. Chelsea have written to the man who was abused and have offered to take him over to the director's box, and they've apologised on behalf of the fans. I think three fans of Chelsea now have been banned from that stadium. Ticking off for Mario Balotelli might have enjoyed training yesterday. He's all smiles in the training session yesterday, but he's been in the papers. He grabbed the ball from his fellow teammate Jordan Henderson in the Europa League match against Besiktas the other night. Henderson was the vice captain. He was going to take the penalty, but Mario stepped up and he took the ball off him, but he did score the penalty, so I think it's a much ado about nothing. Suppose that's all from the papers now. We're going to have to take a commercial break. Coming up after the break, almost 300 repossession orders were before Letterkenny Court this week. But what do you do if you find yourself in this position? Who do you talk to? We'll be speaking to Michael Cullity from the Money Advice and Budgeting Service coming up after this break. Okay, on the show now, we have Michael Cullity. He's an advisor from the Money Advice and Budgeting Service. Michael, good morning.
Hello, good morning to you and your listeners.
Michael, this week we've heard of hundreds of repossession orders sought in Letterkenny Court. I suppose, are these the type of cases or are these the type of problems that more and more people are coming to yourself with?
Yeah, I'm afraid Donegal is not unique here. I've heard similar numbers from other counties. So this is becoming a big problem. And actually, most of the people coming to us now, almost 50%, have a mortgage or are in difficulty with their mortgages. So I think creditors are being using the courts to probably move these cases forward, and particularly, I suppose, to particularly people who haven't engaged, to frighten them into engagement. So it's a pity that people, you know, don't have solutions in play before they arrive at the steps of the court. And we would be most interested in helping people to get to that position if they wish our help and support.
And how do people go about seeking this help?
Gosh, MABS can, first of all, I suppose, I think people are kind of very, they feel powerless and they feel isolated and they feel that really there's nothing that can be done. You know, when they get these rather terrifying notices, these terrifying letters to the door. And the first port of call, would people just pick up a phone and give us a call on our helpline, and that number is 0761072000. And really, that can be the very first step in gaining proper information and hopefully coming to a solution, or at least looking at what solutions are available so that people can engage with their creditors with knowledge. Or if they can't and feel unable to engage with our creditors themselves, so that MABS advisors can do so on their behalf. So that number is 0761072000. Now, in Donegal, there has been a lot of coverage about MABS waiting lists. And I have always said that there is no waiting list for somebody who is in court with their mortgage. You are a priority. If I can talk to you, you know, the people who are in difficulty, you are a priority for MABS, because at the core of our service is keeping people in their own home. So as well as contacting our helpline, there are services in Donegal which you can look up on our website or call our helpline to find out where they are. And you can, you know, access information, support, and if necessary. And I think this is what is the big tragedy today, is that people are going to court on repossession orders and they have no financial or no legal advice. And this is horrific, really horrific for people. And what we're saying is come to us anyway. We can't provide full financial advice. We can't provide full legal advice, but we can maybe put you in touch with that kind of advice. And so therefore, you know, helping you to understand more clearly where you are, what options are available to you, even at that late stage, and possibly come to an arrangement with your bank.
Now, you mentioned the backlogs and the waiting list in Donegal. We've covered for news here at Highlands that North Donegal actually has the biggest backlog, the biggest waiting list in the country, but you're saying that's actually not the case.
Well, look, I'm saying for emergencies, it is not the case. Can I say that again? For emergencies, it is not the case. If it's an emergency, you're in court for a repossession, you are an emergency client, and you should go to the top of the queue. Like, you're comparing that with somebody on a waiting list with a debt to a moneylender. There is no comparison in the seriousness and the urgency of the matter. Of course. Now, the other thing is that I suppose over the last year or more is that our numbers are levelling off. Now, there may be services in Donegal where, because the backlog was large, it may take it a while to even off. But numbers are evening off, even though we are seeing more mortgage debt. We're seeing less of other kinds of debt, maybe because credit isn't available out there. So that may be the reason for it. But if you are in mortgage difficulty and if you are going to court, you should contact your money advice and budgeting service. And can I give you that number again? It's 0761072000.
And does it often happen that people who get into debt, who get into mortgage arrears, people who are facing having their home repossessed, they're embarrassed by the fact they're in so much debt?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that day should have passed, because there are so many people in debt, really, that if you're not in debt, you're in a lucky spot, basically. So, but yes, people think that if they wait, that their circumstances that will change, or that the bank will get tired and go away. don't be fooled. That's not going to happen. You deal with the situation as it is here and now. One of the biggest problems we meet is that people wait too long. They hang on. They hope they'll win the lottery. They hope they'll get a job. They hope that, you know, somebody will let them money. But it doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen.
And so it's often the case that people think if I ignore this, it'll go away.
Well, sure, it doesn't, in fact. It doesn't. And it's ignoring it is not a strategy. It's not a strategy at all. Well, it is a strategy for making things worse, basically. So what we're saying is on Monday morning, you know, if you're in difficulty with your finances and there is an emergency, and you, particularly with your home, call 0761 07 2000 or call your local MAB service and look to be made a priority.
And we'll put those details, Michael, up on our Facebook page. A serious problem in the county, but there is help out there. Michael Cullity from the Money Advice and Budgeting Services, thanks for joining us. Okay, on the show now we have Jim Lawless. He's an author and he's one of the world's leading inspirational speakers. Jim is currently holding seminars and talks where he is telling people that they can achieve the impossible. First of all, Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Barry. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Jim, can people achieve the impossible?
No. No, I don't think they can, I'm afraid. But I do think that we underestimate what we can achieve by huge factors. And I will never beat Usain Bolt over 100 meters. You know, that's not possible for me. I'm 47 years old and I'm not the right build. But I do think that there are extraordinary things that can be achieved. And that's what we'll be going into in the seminar.
And just yourself, you've achieved some things over the years. Just tell us about them.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I think it's very important for anybody like me to put our money where our mouth is and prove it before we have the chutzpah to come out and be telling other people about it. So in 2003, just after I'd started working with the Taming Tigers rules, which had been used in industry by that stage, I'd used them with companies like Apple Computers, with Barclays Bank, but hadn't been used by myself, perhaps, I was challenged, given a £1 bet by a gentleman in a presentation to prove them. And his challenge was to become a jockey in 12 months, which was good. I was 36 years old. I'd never sat on a horse, and I was 3 stone 2 too heavy to ride on the flat. So it was a good challenge. But the rules took me to the racetrack, no problem. And then when my daughter became sick in 2009, 2010, she's fine again now, but she had a couple of years where she was very ill. Then to test the rules again and to raise some money for pediatric research, I took the British freediving record with a dive to 101 meters without air, again using those 10 rules. So they've been proven by me, but they're used by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world now from different seminars and from the book.
And just what examples have people given you that they've used to achieve things that they thought they couldn't achieve?
They would vary. So a lot of people use them at work. So we've had all sorts of sales targets being hit and promotions being achieved and careers being changed. A great number of people start up their own business. They find it's the push that they've needed to get on and do that. Rule number one of the 10 rules is to act boldly today because time is limited. It's just to get on, stop thinking, stop planning, stop rehearsing all the arguments in your head and make something happen. Maybe not the big leap. The big leap might need to come later, but the leap that's going to get you really into the groove of finding out whether you're going to do this thing or not. And a lot of people, for them, the first step is taking some tracks along, starting up their own thing, strangely. So that's happened an awful lot. Oh, other people have wanted to get deeper into their martial arts, and they've been at a local club, but they wanted to work with some global coaches, and they've managed to find ways of doing that. So a whole range of ways that people, in their own brilliant ways, have found to use these rules to do the things they want to do.
And what about maybe a person who's in a certain job, but they want to get that promotion, but they don't believe they can get it? So a person who wants to run a marathon, but they believe that they're too unfit or they're too overweight, you're saying they can do it?
well, within certain health limitations, absolutely. There are two sides to doing anything like that. One is the skill and one is the will. You're not going to get promoted to a job you don't have the skills for, but you can still get that job. You're going to have to put in some hard graft and learn the skills. Let's talk about the tiger for a minute. The tiger, the reason I came up with that name is it's a really real thing, and it really pushes us back. I mean, it sets the heartbeat roaring, it gets the adrenaline pumping, it gets the voices of self-doubt going in our head whenever we think about moving into new and difficult territory. So let's come even one step down from your promotion idea. Let's go for a pay rise. So I want to go in and ask the boss for a pay rise. And as soon as I start thinking about that, I'm going to come up with a load of reasons he doesn't want to give me one, or she. I'm going to come up with a load of obstacles why I possibly don't deserve one myself. I'm going to come up with the fact that it's going to be a difficult conversation, and I don't like difficult conversations. And I've spoken with people who've put this off for 2 years when they clearly deserved a pay rise. And indeed, when they went and asked for one, the boss gave it. They're not going to give it on every occasion. Of course, it may not be warranted, but in many, they were given. Now, the tiger is the thing that roars and tells us we cannot do, we're not able to do the things that we want to, heart and soul, go and do. And so the question that always comes up in any presentation and in the book is, are you writing the story of your life, heart and soul, what you want to do, because you hold the pen? Yeah, of course, we've got some external factors, but by and large, we write the story. If we're living in the free world and we're of decent, reasonably good health, we hold the pen, we write the story. Are you writing it heart and soul what you want to do, or are you letting the tiger, the little fears and insecurities, the reasons we find why I shouldn't, people like me can't run a marathon, people like me can't get fit, are we letting that dictate the story to us? We do love it, let's be honest. We love all the reasons why I can't run a marathon, because those reasons mean I can sit on the sofa, I can have a cup of tea or a beer, we'll watch the telly, because outside it's raining, and no one ever pretended that putting your running shoes on and covering, you know, maybe half a mile on the first day and a mile by the second month and slowly progressing up to marathon length, no one pretended that was easy.
And positive thinking seminars, positive thinking books, suppose we've got the popular book, The Secret. Why is this becoming more and more popular, would you say?
First off, I'm not sure mine's popular. I think it's very practical. There's no shortcut in mine. It's hard graft, determination, and having the courage to look at yourself and think, you know, if I really acted the way that I'm perfectly capable of acting, I could be pulling off some different results for myself, so let's crack on. So I'd distance myself slightly from positive. There's some very much negative, and looking at the negatives in my approach as well, it's very realistic, which is, I think, why a lot of businesses really and serious people at work really enjoy it. Why are we seeing people... we've always seen it, haven't we? We've always seen people looking for ideas as to how they could move forward. You know, The Secret, I've not read in depth, I've glanced at. I think it's, you know, the power of manifesting things for yourself, which wouldn't be my approach, but fair play to those who want to take that route. Mine's more about pick up the shovel, and if you want a hole dug, then could well be you could meet the man or the woman who's perfectly capable of digging that hole, but it's going to take some sweat.
So these things, it's not a fad, it's not people looking to make a quick penny, this actually works?
Oh, I mean, you'd have to look at each on its merits, each approach. I guess I would say this, wouldn't I? Taming tigers works. It's worked all over the world. I don't think it's a fad. I think people are always looking for the inspiration to get up and make things happen. Some people want a quick fix, you know, a CD you can listen to while you sleep or a mantra you can say in the window, and fair play if you can make those work for you. I can't, personally. But I do think that if we overcome the little insecurities in our heads that says, who am I to dream, who am I to try, and we actually get on with trying, we may succeed. We may not, of course, but what we will for sure have done is moved ourselves forward in the process. So I might aim for 10 and hit 5, but I was starting at 1, so 5's a result.
And Jim, for anyone who wants to see your seminar, they can catch up and see you. You're coming to Ireland, and you actually have a Donegal connection here.
I do, Barry, yes. My dad grew up the first part of his life in Dundalk, and then when he was in early teens, his family moved to Letterkenny. So dad grew up in Letterkenny, went to St. Eunan School, and then on my mum's side, my mum's brother, my uncle, and his wife and children lived in Dunloe for most of their lives. So both Letterkenny and then out to the coast, I'm very familiar with, and we've been able to visit several times. But this time, I'm coming to Dublin, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's generally, the seminars are always within an organization, within a company, within a government body. And closed behind doors, but this one's open to the public, which is really exciting. It's on the 26th of February at 6 p.m. and Barocca have kindly arranged it all and invited me over, and they're holding it at the Trinity College Dublin Science Gallery on Pierce Street. So that's where I shall be on the evening of the 26th of Feb. Come along if you can.
Jim Lawless, a very interesting conversation. Thanks for joining the show today.
Barry, my pleasure. Have a great time. Bye-bye.
Okay, you're welcome back to the Weekend Edition. If you were on Twitter or Facebook or even read any of the newspapers on Tuesday or Wednesday, you've probably seen photos of the Northern Lights taken from Malin Head. The man who took the pictures is Ronan McLaughlin, an Inishowen photographer. Ronan's on the line. Ronan, good morning.
Morning, Barry. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Ronan, these pictures you took were quite spectacular. Where did you take them? When did you take them?
I suppose I came home here for midterm break, so myself and the kids are up for a week, and them photographs in particular, they're taken at the tower, so they're taking them from behind the tower looking north, you know.
And what time was this?
Well, actually, it started almost as soon as it got dark, and then from about 8:30 until 11 o'clock, the show was starting, you know, it had started to kick off. And normally what happens is the peak time for an Aurora show here, I've found, is sort of maybe an hour and a half either side of midnight. And but unfortunately, we had a big, big bank of cloud, which came across at about 11 o'clock, sat there until about 2:30 in the morning. And it cleared again for a while before the showers came back. So it was a long old night, you know, but it was rewarding.
And that's it, you have to wait for clear skies, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. I suppose that's the biggest thing, and that's our biggest problem. I was even out last night, and we had a small show again here last night. But it would seem, you know, from my own experience and what I've seen over the years and everything like that, if you have any sort of a semblance of a clear sky and a clear horizon here, that, you know, you can pick up something. Now, you're not going to pick up colour all the time, you know, you're not going to see them sort of things. You might pick up white light, like last night. The naked eye would have picked up the white light of the Aurora. And then at about 12:30, there's a wee touch of green just started to appear on the horizon, and it died away again after that again. But it's good old fun, you know what I mean? Cold, fresh air, but it's good to watch, you know, and it's good to see the different moods of the night sky as well, because there's if the Aurora is not there, there's obviously plenty of other things that can entertain your spooky, for that matter, when you're out your own like that.
Yeah, and photography, is it a profession or is it a hobby for
you?
No,
purely hobby, purely hobby. I suppose I started taking pictures back in 1994 with old film cameras, but then got into the digital age, and part of my reason for getting into it was just to take photographs of birds and stuff like that and wildlife. But so the moving on to the landscapes, and, you know, particularly Aurora, and like I'm sitting in my bedroom here now and I'm looking at the tower. So, you know, as a child growing up here, we've seen, you know, I've seen multitudes of Auroras, plenty of the big shows, you know, the ones that people have seen that have lit up the night sky. So we've seen plenty of those over the years, but anything that you would have seen in those photographs now, particularly since Christmas, we had, I think it was Christmas Eve, St. Stephen's Day, we had a decent enough show. We had a couple of smaller shows then we had a show there on Monday night, Tuesday morning, and again a wee show last night, you know. So it can be fairly regular, but none of these shows so far this year have been the big ones. But I'd suggest that, you know, there's always sort of one big show a year, the one that you can stand outside in your garden and view. So we would hope that, you know, certainly before the equinox, and the equinox has been, probably the best time of year to see it, around the middle of March towards the end of March, and again in September, for whatever reason. And actually the scientists don't know why that is the case. But it always seems to be some of the best times to see it, you know.
Now, like, what kind of camera do you use for these pictures? Because anybody who's seen the pictures are spectacular. But is this
No, is this the effects of the camera that made these pictures look so spectacular, or is this what it looks like if you're there in person?
On Monday night, Tuesday night, you would have seen quite a bit of that. Now, the pictures that I'd processed from last night, all you would have seen was white light. Now, I did start to pick up some green in my eye, but I had been out for about 3-4 hours at that stage, so that my eyes were well adjusted. You know, I could see exactly where I was walking around the tower and stuff like that. So it does take a while. Like, people can't just, you know, drive to the tower, leave the car lights on, or, you know, drive out to Malinhead, leave the car lights on, switch the radio on in the car, you know, and leave the internal lights of the car on and expect to see it through their windscreen. You know, you can't do that. You need to get out and about. You need to let your eyes adjust. And then you will start to see the movement. The first thing that you'll pick up would be white light. So what it'll look like is it'll look like a glow on the northern horizon. But then you might start to see it moving. And when that starts to move, that's the little substorms that happen. Now, that doesn't happen all the time because the aurora can pulse. And what ends up happening is, you know, 15 minutes, all of a sudden you can get a blast of colour and it's gone again. You know, maybe 2 or 3 hours later, you get another blast. So there's all about lady luck with this. I use semi-professional cameras. So these aren't the pro, by no means these are no professional cameras. Anybody with a digital SLR, and a lot of people have digital SLRs nowadays, anybody with one of those would be able to capture that and see what colour comes out in the camera then at the end, you know.
And what time did you post them? I seen on Twitter. You posted the picture on Twitter, or the pictures on Twitter. Was it in the early hours of Wednesday morning?
No, to be honest with you, I'm trying to remember. I think it was either Tuesday morning. It was around 9 o'clock, half nine in the morning. Anyway, it was a Tuesday morning. Yeah, I think it was about half nine Tuesday morning actually, because I had taken the photograph. I'd started taking photographs at about 8:30 on Monday night into about 2-3 o'clock on Tuesday morning. So it was Tuesday morning, 9 o'clock, they were posted.
And they just went viral from there? They were all over the internet?
They just went nuts. I was actually quite surprised because I thought the ones that I took on Boxing Day were actually better. But that's my own opinion. It certainly did a lot. And I would hope that, you know, any of the interviews that I've given either to yourselves or in other ways that, you know, might give people an insight into what they will see. Like, you're not necessarily, you don't just come to Malinhead and see the aurora. There's an awful lot of luck. Now, I'm lucky here. I'm here for the week and I can just stand at the front door and look north and there's nothing between me and Iceland here. So it's very easy for me just to go outside, have a look and say, oh yeah, oh, hold on a minute now, there's something going on there in the north sky, let's get the camera out and let's have a wee look, you know. But it's Irish weather that's the problem, you know yourself. Cool, damp, wet climate, cloudy nights sometimes, you know. But what I'm finding is that with my own little hobby, my own little research here, is that, you know, a vast majority of the clear nights, you will pick the, you know, cameras do pick up something. The eyes won't pick up everything. But, you know, once or twice a year, coming into the spring now, up until the start of April, I would be hopeful now that we'd get another big, big show between now and then, you know.
And I suppose the many people who would have seen these pictures may be thinking, God, I'd love to go see that.
Yep.
So, you know, where is the best place to go, or when is the best time to go for people who are considering to go see this for themselves?
Yeah. Well, anywhere along the north coast, you know, should that be anywhere, you know, from Fairhead right over to Bloody Foreland, it doesn't really matter. I just happen to live here. It's easy for me. So it can be anywhere along the north coast, but the most important thing is dark. You know, you need to be dark, and there's no point in sort of, you know, standing in the middle of Letterkenny. Now, there is occasions where it has been seen in Letterkenny, all right, but, you know, you don't stand in the middle of Letterkenny town in the main street Letterkenny and say, oh, I can't see it from here. That's not going to happen. You really need to get, if you want to get the best views, you really need to go north and you need to go dark. You need to find a dark location, because even the slightest little bit of light pollution will have an effect on it. And the moon, one of the most important things as well, like, there's no point in going out trying to view aurora in a full moon. You won't see it. So the best part of the month, obviously, is if you can get a clear sky, if you can get a new moon, and yet the sun is active and the aurora is active, well, then you have a chance. So there's a lot of things have to come together before you can get that opportunity to see it, you know.
And is now the right time of year to see it?
Now is definitely the right time of year. Between now and the spring equinox coming up into April, I can remember last April I had four nights in a row here where I had aurora. Again, nothing spectacular, nothing big, but still, there were shows. But definitely between now and April, because obviously when you start going into May and June, it's obviously too bright here at night time and things like that. But no, as I said, if you can find anywhere with a dark location, if it's a new moon or a small moon, you know, maybe first quarter, last quarter moon, clear night, and the sun is a bit active, and the sun is starting to get a wee bit active again there now. You know, you never know. Your luck might be in.
Just a question in from a listener. They don't give their name, but Ronan, they're saying, would you think about setting up a live feed online?
Actually, a few people have said that to me about live cams webcams and things like that. And to be honest with you, I've emailed Met Aaron and asked to pinch the use of their webcam, but I've got no response. I haven't done it. I haven't really thought about it, but you know, it could be useful. But I suppose to get the best view, getting power and stuff like that to it is a bit problematic. But you never know. Maybe it's something we can work on, you know.
Yeah, but there's definitely an interest in it, and I think because of your photographs going viral, a lot more people will probably be going up towards Malinhead to try see this. I think. Well, yeah. I'm going to go up myself next week.
Barry, as I said, it's potluck. You know, it is lady luck. Like, you can go up and you mightn't see anything, but then again, you'll see cracking views of the Milky Way and stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, you're going to look out and you see, my God, I didn't know there was that many stars in the sky. Because it is, you know, these are dark locations. It gives you great views of the sky. Malinhead is a relatively safe location, but, you know, if anybody's driving around or anything, you know, there are narrow roads and stuff like that. So just take your time, be careful at night time, you know. I'm lucky enough, I know the place like the back of my hand, so I go around sort of just with a head torch, a little head torch that I might use just to mind the footing and things like that. But, no, as I mentioned, you've a fair bit of lady luck that's needed to do it. But if the conditions come together for you, and can do, you know, a few times a year, you could get lucky.
Yeah, Ronan, I must try. Hopefully we get a clear night someday next week.
Hopefully we do.
And I'd say I'll not be the only person looking to go up. Ronan McLaughlin, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ronan. It's time for a break now. After the break, Catherine Gaffney will have all the latest news.